genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brains.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the Internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is empowerment. Each of my guests will examine different aspect of empowerment. My first guest believes that the girl power movement that began back in the 1980s has gone way too far in the 2010s. We'll discuss the impact of the Princess Society is having on young girls and whether or not it empowers girls from her book, Cinderella Ate My Daughter. My second guest is the world's first female rock and roll manager, and you talk about empowerment. She worked with the most influential musicians of the era between the years 1968 and 1984. We'll discuss her experiences, her memories of the famous rock stars, and how she became a tour manager from her book titled Miss Odell. My third guest is going to empower us all by helping us to double our incomes in the next 180 days or less by changing our thoughts about money from his book, The Income Doubler. And as I said, as always, if you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Peggy Ornstein is recognized for her outstanding coverage of the family diversity by the Council on Contemporary Families. And she received a Books for a Better Life Award from her book titled Waiting for Daisy. Peggy examines the impact on young girls that society places on them from a very early age. Her latest book is Cinderella Ate My Daughter, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the New Girly Girl Culture. Peggy explores the impact of the girly girl culture may be having on our daughters' identities and their futures. Peggy was born in Minneapolis, Minnesota. She's a graduate of Oberlin College, and now she lives in the Bay Area with her husband and their daughter. Welcome to the show, Peggy. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you on board, and thank you so much for being our guest. Now, you've got a daughter, I've got a granddaughter, so we both have a very vested interest in understanding the influences being placed on them and how those influences may alter their futures. So, you know, from the Disney princesses to pink-colored Muppets to Bratz dolls to Hannah Montana, tell us, why isn't this just benign play for girls?
Well, you know, what happens is that, you know, I'm a mother, like you said, and so I do have a very deep vested interest in this, and I have been watching my daughter as she grows up and the kind of tsunami of pink and then princess and sparkles and the ways that that goes from, as you said, the sort of pink and pretty to a diva pink to a sexualized pink. And I've been watching that with increasing concern. You know, I think that it's just become so dominant, that play pattern, and it has overwhelmed girls' lives, and it's become, rather than one choice of how they play, which it was probably when you were little or when I was little or when your daughter was little, to being pretty much a mandate.
Interesting. Now, let's go through that. What is the difference between the pink that we see in the dolls and even the Disney characters to what you characterize as diva pink or even sexualized pink?
Well, so, you know, what's different today is that girls at an ever younger age are being encouraged to define themselves through appearance and kind of, you know, what marketers call sassiness, which is kind of sexy with training wheels. From the time they're very little, starting with the kind of princess phase when they're, which is not so much as it used to be about the traditional stories or even about you know, the whole handsome prince business, but it's about a kind of materialism and having the most stuff and adorning yourself and the little baby makeup and the spa birth, and then it turns into, and this is where it very quickly starts to twist, the spa birthday parties, the child-friendly manicure pedicures, the Bippity-Boppity Boutique down in Disney World, where for $190 you can have your whole hair and makeup done and be turned into a real little princess. And it becomes so much and so quickly about girls defining themselves from the outside in instead of from the inside out, which is a message that they're going to be getting persistently throughout their lives, whether they are 3 or 13 or 33 or 63.
Interesting. We're talking to Peggy Ornstein, everybody, her book, Cinderella Ate My Daughter. We're talking about the new girly girl society. And Peggy, let's drill down on several of the things that you said in that answer, which is just chock full of good stuff. But I want to drill down on the whole Disney thing, because you have statistics in your book that global revenue generated by Disney princess products increased from $300 million way back in 2000 to $4 billion in 2009. So just over that decade period, it leapfrogged. But isn't Disney just finding a need and filling it? I mean, isn't this just girl power from the 1980s translated into their children's children?
I think that that girl power, rather than girl power, it's girls power with a Z.
Mm.
And that's, you know, what I think of as being the sort of consumer feminine. And, you know, I think that what little girls, what's natural is that they gravitate towards whatever is extreme in the culture that lets them express that they're girls. Because at that age, at the 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old age, they don't really get the whole anatomy is permanent issue. So they think they could grow up to be either a mommy or a daddy. And what they do, what makes you a girl, or a boy, but we're talking about girls, what makes you a girl is, you know, wearing a dress. And that's why you can't wrestle your 3-year-old into pants suddenly. So when I was a little girl, and maybe when you were little also, that meant baby dolls, baby buggies, dollhouses, that sort of easy bake ovens, that sort of thing. Now it means pink and princess. So it's the need exists for girls to do that. The exploitation of that need is a totally different thing. And I think that in order to counter that, you know, it's not good enough to swing to the sort of free to be you and me neutrality of giving your girls blocks, or, you know, not that you shouldn't, but that won't satisfy that need. Best strategy is to find other things that express the feminine and express the joy and the celebration of girlhood that aren't constantly linking it to appearance and, you know, being outer directed.
Okay, well, now, Peggy, that does bring up the whole role of the responsibility of the parents, because
that's
right. A 3-year-old child can't make those kinds of decisions. They just, as you say, will gravitate towards whatever society will allow them to get away with. So let's talk about it. What is the role of the parents in this? I mean, you know, hopefully the parents are the guiding forces in their lives. How is it that the parents are allowing these children to wear eyeliner at age 8, to pursue these girly girl pursuits that eventually lead into a more sexualized activity later in the girl's life?
I think it's really hard for parents to connect the dots. I mean, you know, like I said, I'm a mom, and I know how intense and present tense parenting is. So, you know, when you have a 3-month-old, you can't imagine having a 6-year-old. And when you have a 6-year-old, you forget about the 3-month-old, and, you know, you don't want to think about having a 13-year-old. So each little phase, when you look at it, it seems like no big deal, and it's really hard to connect the dots and perceive the vulnerability and look at sort of, you know, the little girl princess to the flesh and blood princess of, you know, the next phase, which is going into the Disney Channel, you know, Miley Cyrus, whoever the girl of the day is, you know, and on and on, and see what that is, sort of where the flume ride is going to take your daughter. And that initial pink and princess thing, you know, it does seem really innocent, and it also, you know, reminds us a little bit of the way that we played, even though that Disney princess concept didn't exist. You mentioned the year 2000. That was the first time that they put it out there and that they marketed characters separate from a film's release. And that was what was really different, and that was what was really really changed. So it feels kind of familiar, it feels kind of innocent, and it feels protective rather than priming girls for later sexualization.
All right, we're talking to Peggy Ornstein, everybody. Cinderella Ate My Daughter, dispatches from the front line of the new girly girl culture. And Peggy, when you and I were both growing up, the princess syndrome used to be, someday my prince will come and he's going to rescue me from all of this and whisk me away to the big castle. I mean, that's what it was. So that's what my daughter grew up with, and that was sort of the mindset of the time. When did that sort of helplessness transform itself into this overly self-conscious narcissism that you're talking about?
Well, I don't know if I could tell you, like, the very moment, but I think that, you know, that idea started. So the 90s was when girl power really ascended, and it was a kind of subversive idea, and it was about, at first, and then the mainstream notion was, you know, imbuing girls with ideas of self-confidence and power and independence and strength. And then that kind of got grabbed by the culture, I think, really around the sort of Britney Spears, Spice Girls era, and turned into something else that then drifted downwards in age. So when my daughter was 7, for her birthday, she, you know, had obviously gotten out of that early princess phase, but she was given a make-your-own messenger bag kit. And it had hearts and flowers and, you know, that sort of thing, iron-on transfers. And among the transfers were those that said, spoiled, brat, and pampered princess. And, you know, she said, Mom, why do they want me to put that on my purse? Which I thought, yes, honey, let's throw those away, shall we? But, you know, I think that there was this way that along the line with those pop images, that idea of self-confidence, the way that girls were supposed to express power rather and self-confidence was through self-absorption and narcissism. And I think, you see that in the culture everywhere for girls, whether they're 3 or you know, and putting on princess dresses and saying, I'm really pretty, and putting on nail polish and clear lip gloss, or whether they're, you know, keeping up with the Kardashians when they're 14.
All right. We're talking to Peggy Orenstein. Peggy, your book is just chock full of very interesting factoids, and some of them are actually quite disturbing. But and there were a couple that I took umbrage with as well. But let's talk about some of the ones that I found disturbing that you also find disturbing. One is that nearly 50% of girls aged 6 to 9, regularly use lipstick or lip gloss. The percentage of 8 to 12-year-old girls who regularly use eyeliner doubled between the years 2008 and 2010. What is that telling us, Peggy?
that somebody's got a lot of spending money. You know, that's the biggest growth market, actually, for cosmetics right now is 8 to 12-year-olds. And Walmart just rolled out this line, Geo Girl, that for that age group, saying that since girls are wearing clear lip gloss and nail polish at 3, 4, 5, that this is a quote, they naturally want enhancement by 8. You know, I don't know. I don't really want my third grader missing the school bus because she doesn't have her face on, personally. But, but you know, it's about this idea of kids growing older, younger, which is that a product begins being pitched for an older child. So, like, Barbie was originally for 9 to 12-year-old girls, and now girls are done with her when they're, you know, by 6. And little kids reach up because they aspire to be like the older kids, and then the older kids, you know, sort of flee. And so for girls, that idea of being cool means increasingly looking hot. And so they, you know, when older girls wear cosmetics, it sort of, you know, drifts downward, and we become, I guess, kind of inured to it. But, you know, I think the good news is that parents do have the power to make change and put their foot down, and they do control the credit cards. And, you know, we don't have to let our 8-year-olds wear blush and eyeliner and mascara if we refuse to as a community.
All right. We're talking to Peggy Orenstein, everybody. Cinderella Ate My Daughter. In that answer, Peggy, I'm convoluted because there's some things that she said in there that I agree with, others that I don't. First of all, let's talk about disposable income. Mm-hmm. Interesting that you brought that up. There was a recent article in Time magazine that said children now have more disposable income than their parents.
Yeah.
Because children are unencumbered by such things as mortgages, health care, et cetera, et cetera. And so as a percentage of their overall money that they get in allowance or however they get money, they have more disposable income. So this is really just a function of smart marketeers recognizing where the money is, and let's blow off mom and dad because they really have the mortgage to pay, and let's go directly for the children who have got the money to spend.
Correct.
All right. So we're in agreement there. But then we come back to the Barbie thing.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned, and I'll just re-quote the statistic. The age of Barbie target audience in 1959 was 9 to 12-year-old girls.
Mm-hmm.
The age of Barbie's target audience today is now 3 to 7-year-old girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I can agree with that, and I understand that that has obviously changed, but The reason, or one of the reasons it may have changed, is not so much this culturalization of Cinderella, but that electronics have replaced dolls and toys of all kinds as what children of the middle years, 8 to 16, really aspire to. And so it's really these dolls have been pushed aside for electronics more than anything else. They'd rather have the latest iPod or the latest iPhone than they would have a Barbie doll.
Well, I think that's true to a degree, except that that girls also move into, you know, like I said, a sort of increasingly diva-ish thing, and they move on to the Disney Channel girls rather than, I mean, they move on to electronic stuff too, but they're also moving on to different ideals and role models that are sort of related. So they go from princess to, say, Hannah Montana, and that happens earlier and earlier. And, you know, I think with those shows, you see again, or those icons, you see that princess innocence sort of turning. And so initially they make wholesomeness into a marketing gimmick. And then later on, when the girl gets older, you know, what comes after becomes a marketing gimmick too, so that the sexual self-objectification essentially becomes a rite of passage for little girls.
All right. Now, we're running out of time, and I just want to say again, we're talking to Peggy Ornstein, author of the book Cinderella Ate My Daughter. But, Peggy, this is nothing new for Disney. Disney had Haley Mills back when I was growing up, and people looked to her, and she was, you know, that kind of crossover between a young girl and a woman. And so I don't know if this is anything new, is it?
I think it's younger, you know, and I don't know if Haley... I'm sorry, Haley Mills was before my time.
thanks for that, dear.
But I did love Haley Mills, and I think she probably aged a little more gracefully
than
some of the girls are aging now. But, you know, I think, again, if we were sitting here and talking about ideas about self-objectification or provocative clothing or cosmetic use or any of that with girls and concerns about sexualization 10 years ago, we'd be talking about 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds. And now we're talking about the impact of those things on the youngest girls, and that really is a new phenomenon.
It is, and we're going to have to leave it there. We've been talking to Peggy Ornstein, everybody. Cinderella Ate My Daughter, dispatches from the front line of the new girly girl culture. And as you can see, it's just filled with all sorts of interesting things that get you thinking about the way in which our children are marketed to at a younger and younger age. Peggy, thank you so much for being our guest. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about your book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
They can go right to my website. They can get there either by PeggyOrenstein.com or CinderellaAteMyDaughter.com.
CinderellaAteMyDaughter.com. Peggy, thank you so much for being my special guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
It was my pleasure.